Everybody for being here today. It means a lot to all of us. And for those traditionalists in the room, I couldn't not wear lipstick today. My mom would kill me. She would say, Judy, at your age, you need a little color. It was at our kitchen table where so much happened and so much was learned. It's where stories were told during long Sunday brunches in the summer when our kids would hear about my parents' lives, my grandparents, their childhoods, what Seattle was like when everyone lived within a few blocks of each other. It was at that table that our mom passed on her values, sometimes explicitly, things are never as bad as you think they're going to be, or implicitly, that family is so important. It was a place where we'd squeeze in cousins, aunts, and uncles when they dropped in for coffee, even though those chairs, you remember them, with their big, bulky arms, they took up so much room. There was always space. Our mom was all about hospitality. There was always plenty of food, following in her mom's or grandma's footsteps. There were always burecas, bulamas, parmarks, you know what they are, pandetas, bizcochos, ready to be defrosted or put out for whomever stopped by. She had baking days. Like, who does that? She had baking days. Not only to get ready for an event, but just because she didn't want to get too low, as she said, or God forbid, run out. As I was looking at her hands on the last day of her life, and I saw her veins, so blue, so prominent, and I just couldn't help wondering how many bulemas did those hands roll so expertly. Pull, and then roll. Pull, then roll. Thousands, I'm sure. And each one, gold. When company was coming for Shabbat, we count how many to take out of the freezer. How many are you really going to eat? And she was clear, we can't waste any of them, because they're like $100 per piece in labor. And if by chance company was coming and she didn't have enough of whatever in the house, she'd send out my dad, Moni, to QFC. And while there, she'd have him paged because she thought of another thing 5 minutes after he left. They knew him there. I think everyone on the island knew him. Over the intercom, one could regularly hear, "Saul Israel, please come to the customer service desk." If company's coming, she wanted it to be just right. It's the way she honored people, and she made them feel special and welcome. She was a class act. The other day, I was making something for company, and a little piece of parsley or some green thing, I don't know, got into some dough. I was going to leave it, because honestly, I really don't care about that. But knowing my mom was at the end of her life, I just couldn't leave it. I picked it out carefully, and I felt just like her doing that. And it felt great to honor my mom in this silly way. Much as it did last night, when for the first time in my life, I ironed a tablecloth. The one that we're going to be using when we return from the cemetery today. And you know what? It does look better. The kitchen table was where we were not only nourished physically, but spiritually as well. We laughed, we caught up with each other, okay, we gossiped a lot, and we lingered. I learned about some of her regrets, when she played things too safely and felt that she lost out on some key experiences. And then the pride she felt and the fun she had when she took more risks and had more confidence, like when she volunteered with a street musician one day to be part of his act. She would never have done that in her younger years. Having missed the college experience to get married at 19 to her beloved Moni, she cycled back, once becoming an empty nester, and enrolled at Bellevue Community College, where she mostly studied French, and emerged as a star student, accent and all. And she didn't stop there. As my friend Beth reminded me last night, she enrolled in the Melton Adult Mini School, studying Jewish texts with Beth and others, and becoming more involved in the wider Jewish community. She always talked about how my dad's love and support gave her the confidence she lacked in her earlier years to speak up, try new things, and even join National Council of Jewish Women, which was predominantly an Ashkenazi organization. She was proud to say that she ended up becoming president of the chapter and making dear friends. The inferiority complex she had around Ashkenazi women began to dissipate, but perhaps didn't disappear completely. I remember one phone call while she was at the summit, and she told me, "I met somebody new in the dining room. She's Ashkenazi, but she's very nice." One of my mom's unusual talents was in baby swaddling. Maybe it was because her bulamas were always so tightly wrapped, but she was so adept at swaddling her grandkids so snugly. Each time she left Boston, when our kids were still infants, I was bereft. What do I do now? How will they stay swaddled? Will they survive if we come undone? Who's going to make us breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Who's going to fold our clothes, our towels, iron our sheets like they do in the military? She was that kind of mom, and she took pride in everything she touched, and I felt enormous appreciation for the care she took in all things, both big and small. Our mom could have been on Broadway, I'm not kidding. She had a fabulous voice and a dramatic flair. I could see her like yesterday, singing Sentimental Journey at our grandma's 90th with her sisters Becky and Stella. My mom in the center, like Diana Ross, with her Supremes on either side. People loved it. And for just an evening, she had that starlit feeling, giving her a taste of what fame might have been like. My mom and I both had this quirky habit of laughing hysterically when something went wrong. Like when we're pouring oil from a big container into a smaller container and we miss it entirely and create an oil slip on the counter and the floor. It annoys the hell out of everybody else. But we just crack up, laughing uncontrollably. You know, like when you're in the library and you already got in trouble for giggling and you just can't stop. I'm going to miss that about her, and so much more. Even though she was failing, particularly this past year, and she was 91 and a half, it's nonetheless so odd that she's not really here. I keep expecting her, of course, to walk in, looking really, really sharp. And I just have to say, I didn't write this, but this is the first step of the reality that she's dead. Because our mom had claustrophobia. This scared the hell out of her, honestly. So this is how I know she's really gone. But it is odd that she's not here because she really always rallied. She was so tough. She was determined to make it to her great-grandson Jonah's bar mitzvah 3 weeks ago. And was at one point, not too long ago, also hoping to make it to his high school graduation and to our two-year-old granddaughter's bat mitzvah, too. Ridiculous, you say, but she loved living, and she wanted to see it all. Well, she got to that bar mitzvah when no one thought it was possible. And it was only possible, in large measure, due to the care of my brother Jack and sister-in-law Anna, and later, our wonderful caretaker, who became my family, Dimelin Domingo, provided for her these last 3+ years. Susie and I could not have done what they did. And we are so grateful for the new home that they created for her, the handling of her health care, her meds, her physical and emotional care, And of course, the amazing meals Anna prepared 3 times a day. And the exercise Jack made her go through almost every day to the end. The two of them, and then the three of them, became an incredible team that allowed our mom to thrive longer than she would have otherwise. I hope you will forever feel enormous pride in how you cared for mom all the way until her last breath. Thank you, and may our mom's memory be for a blessing.
Thank you, Judy. I'd like to call Susan to deliver a few words of eulogy.
My father, in his infinite wisdom, always told me to watch what I said to my mother because she was my best friend. At the time, I took for granted that she would always be around. My father was right. My mother was always there for me in good times and in bad, consistently being my cheerleader, helping me with junior high sewing projects or finishing them for me, typing my school papers for me because I was and still am a terrible typist. My mother also helped me decipher Shakespeare with me in high school. She was an avid reader and encouraged me to become an avid reader. Still working on that. I'm also eternally grateful for my mom pushing me to join BBYO. I had so much fun and it truly made my high school years bearable. My mom and I shared a love for cooking, and I will miss poring over cookbooks with my mom, looking for and deciding on recipes for her many dinner parties. I will also miss our walks to the Lakes neighborhood on Mercer Island, and then stopping at Starbucks on the way home for coffee and share a pastry. Mom, thank you for all of your love and encouragement. You are always in my heart and thoughts.
Thank you, Susan. I'd like to call upon Ben, Virginia's grandson, to share his words with you. A few weeks ago, I was driving past Morso Island on my way home and decided to take the exit onto Ironcrest Way and drive past my grandma and grandpa's house that I would visit at least once a year, every year of my life. As I stopped the car and looked at the house, I felt like I missed it just as much, or maybe even a little more, than the house I grew up in back in Boston. I probably only spent about 14 days a year on average at that house on Morso Island, yet still felt somehow on par with my childhood home where I spent the other 351 days, and that is due in large part to my grandma. Not only did visiting my grandparents feel like visiting the world's greatest summer resort, but it was also a place I felt deeply at home in. It didn't feel like a place I was visiting, but rather it was a place where I could relax, exhale, and just be. Our visits growing up would be filled with movies, mini golf, blackberry picking, walks around the neighborhood, games of Uno filled with belly laughs and red lines, and of course, some of the greatest food I've ever had in my life. But equally on par with those activities were times when we really didn't do much of anything. I would just walk into the family room and grandma would be sitting in her spot on the love seat, opening the mail. She'd go through each item one by one, pointing out anything that was interesting and separating the pile into important stuff and things that could be tossed. Then she'd hold up the big stack of mail to be tossed and say, "Can you believe this is all junk?" And then we just hang out and she explained the backstories of the characters on the daytime soap opera she had on before handing me the remote and saying, "Feel free to change it to whatever you want." Then we just keep hanging out and laughing at whatever show I put on, or maybe something on TV would prompt a conversation about politics or some current event. I often need time to decompress after being around people, and I love these times that I spent with my grandma and felt like she was someone I could be alone with. I love that I could spend time with her in a way that felt relaxing and gave me the ability to recharge. There's a saying that cooking for your family is a way to show them that you love them. To say that my grandma exhibited this trait would be an understatement. Every Saturday for brunch, there would be soutwash, bulemas, burekas, rosca, and of course some maple bars that my grandpa had picked up that morning. I would spend at least 6 months a year looking forward to this one meal, and I would savor every bite. When I got older, she showed me how to make bulgogis, and I was gobsmacked by how labor-intensive the process was. I can't imagine the hours and hours of time she spent making all these staples, and she always made sure they were there. I can still remember walking with my grandma to the freezer in the garage to get the bulgogis and bulgogis, or grabbing a biscocho from the big glass jar under the stove, or a pamark from the red tin to the left of the fridge, or the sight of my grandma walking through the door of our house in Boston with the big green cooler carrying all of those things. It wasn't just about the food itself, but also the care that was put into it, the tradition and ritual, and the comfort and familiarity. Most of my life, I lived over 3,000 miles away from my grandma, but it didn't feel that way. Her and my grandpa never missed an event in our lives. They were there for our bar and bat mitzvahs, each of our 8th grade high school and college graduations, which were all in different states, and even our 8th grade plays. Whenever I had some sort of good news to share growing up, I couldn't wait to tell my grandma in particular. Even if I was calling her from 3,000 miles away, her excitement, elation, and pride was so palpable even through the phone that I felt like she was there with me. She would yell, "All right!" and her voice would go up a few octaves. On more than one occasion, she would tell me that family is the most important thing, and she was truly the head cheerleader for her grandkids. I love her and miss her forever.
Thank you, Ben. I'd like to call upon Shayna, Gina's granddaughter, to share her words of knowledge.
I am the crier of the family. If she was here, she'd tell me that I'm a little soft, an easy crier, just like my grandfather. She's right. I'm my grandmother's oldest granddaughter. I'm going to try my best to get through this. My grandmother was very much my person. I need to take absolutely nothing from my mother and my father, my brother, my wife, my children, and the rest of my family in saying that. But really, no one loves you like grandparents do, and my grandmother was extra special to me. I'll leave the telling of the facts of her life to others throughout the next week. There are so many things I wasn't allowed to see, so I'll just share who she was for me and to me. I absolutely adored my grandmother, and I felt so truly loved by her. She was a wonderful grandmother in my younger years. I have happy memories of those years, spending time in her house playing Monopoly with my brother on the thick knotted rug. Holidays, family picnics, vacations, a trip to Disneyland, annual trips to Seaside, Oregon, playing blackjack on Shabbat, really, with family around the table after having eaten a brunch made of labor-intensive Sephardic foods, which were always plentiful, especially when the out-of-town cousins came, as I never failed to point out. But the details of early memories fade first, and the memories that are clear start in high school. In high school, my parents decided to send me to Mercer Island High, a better school option than the high school near home. They sacrificed time with me to give me a better educational option, and because my grandparents lived on Mercer Island, they were the lucky recipients of a sullen, moody, struggling teenager, struggling through all the things that make high school life hard. Despite my struggles, my grandmother always made me feel like having me at her house was akin to winning the lottery. I spent so many nights there in high school that the spare bedroom became mine, and the house became my home. I'm kind of an ugly crier, sorry. She gave me space as I needed it, but she was always there when I needed her. I spent countless nights at the round kitchen table eating meals made just for me. There's nothing like a sandwich made of my grandmother's beans. I know it sounds weird, but trust me. No matter how late I came home from various activities, she was ready to go with food and undivided attention. I have no doubt that she was tired, but she'd stay up later than planned, and I'd sit on her counter and talk to her while she made me something to eat. She always listened to what I had to say like I was regaling her with the most fascinating stories. She didn't pry, but she asked just enough questions to convey that she actually cared. When I needed to memorize 14 lines of Shakespeare, due the next day, she was worried but confident I could do it, and then she sat with me at the table and helped. So many things have fallen out of my head since, but most of those lines of Shakespeare are still there, as is the memory of her shock and pride when I managed to do it in a short time. My grandmother looked me in a way that let me know that even when she delivered some harsh words, there was no sting intended, just a message, some more direct than others. While I was in high school or early college, I can't remember which, I sat on her counter and sang a random song. She waited until I was done and then told me that I sang just like my aunt. And then she followed it up to tell me, "And your aunt can't sing." Right to the point. For the record, she later told me that Auntie Judy sings much better now. She'd tell me if my shirt was too small, a veiled way to tell me that I'd gotten a bit bigger, or she'd tell me that it was time for a haircut. I thought I might have liked that, even though I might have liked that shirt or my hair that day, it rolled off just as she intended. It was just a message of her thoughts, no malice. The honest judgment about the little things made me feel like she was really seeing me, and so I trusted that the love and kind words and support, that was her also seeing me honestly. It helped me see myself through her lens. When I went off to college, we talked on the phone all the time. She wrote occasional letters, and she came up to visit. When I failed my first test, I walked across campus straight to the payphone booth, and I called my grandmother. She assured me it would be okay. I probably didn't fail. I shouldn't worry. She had the confidence in me. She was wrong. I did fail. But she was right about it being okay, and her assurance that it would be okay was exactly what I needed. I will never forget when she came to visit me my third year of college. My grandparents drove all the way up to Bellingham to the big house, it was rather questionable, that I'd rented with six friends. When she arrived, she got out of the car and came to the door, and then barely passed the threshold of the house, she very, very politely suggested that we skip the tour and head straight to lunch. My grandmother kept a meticulously clean house. She was of a generation that ironed underpants. Needless to say, she was horrified about what she could see from just the entryway, but I swear we did clean it before she came. And though she didn't mask it well, she refrained from telling me that, quote, she just couldn't go in there. It felt right sometime later. It was very grim of her. When I came out, my grandmother was unfazed. I recall absolutely no change in how she spoke to me or treated me, nor did she show an ounce less of interest in my life. Sometimes she'd call just to tell me that Oprah had a lesbian on her show. When I asked her what the show was about that day, she couldn't recall. It didn't matter. She was showing me that she was thinking of me, and she had a reason to connect. When she met my wife, she welcomed her into the family without hesitation, happy to see me happy. And when her first great-grandson was born, she was beyond thrilled. She often told me that both my boys were something really special, and she made them feel special, just like she made me feel special. A few short months after my oldest son, Jonah, was born, I called her up to tell her about my day. As always, she sounded excited to talk to me. She was so invested in hearing even about the most mundane things. But I was excited that particular day, too. I had managed my newborn all on my own. Done the laundry, vacuumed, did the dishes, took out the trash, bathed the kiddo, bathed myself. I was feeling quite proud of my accomplishments. She listened while I told her all about it, and then she asked, "And did you make dinner?" I told her I hadn't, and she said, "Oh, well, call me when you can do all that and make dinner." Still makes me laugh. Just think about it. When I decided to go to law school, she told me how proud she was, and when I graduated, she was there to cheer me on. I have always kept a picture of my grandparents with their arms around me at graduation at my desk. She was there when I was sworn in, and she was one of the first people I called when I got my first job after law school, and then my second, and then my third. She always wanted to know how I was doing, even when it was bad news, even when I was really struggling. And she listened, allowing me to release all my feelings. If it was ever a burden to hear, I never knew. She never hurried me off the phone or tried to repaint things in a false positive light to ease the discomfort that comes from hearing someone be upset. As I got more and more burnt out with the work I was doing, I called my grandmother more. And she called me all the time, too. It was always to tell her. It was always okay to tell her when things were hard. She'd listen and support me. She'd try to come up with ideas to make it better. And she knew when I wasn't ready to fix it, and she'd just listen. When I was finally ready, when I somewhat impulsively quit my job, I talked to my grandmother. Her first question was, "Well, is that a good thing?" She was looking to me. Should she celebrate? Should she worry? She was going to be what I needed in that moment. Somehow, she always figured out what I needed and delivered it with love. For the record, it was a good thing, and we both got to celebrate and enjoy the freedom it brought me. It gave me so much more time to see her in this past year. When she couldn't catch me by phone, my grandmother left voicemails. And if you know me, you know that I never, ever listen to my voicemails, though I do return the calls, don't worry. I have more than 650 unheard voicemails on my phone right now. And until yesterday, that included dozens from my grandmother dating back to 2017, really. I spent the evening last night sobbing and listening to everything from invitations to dinner, to general check-ins, to her singing happy birthday. Made me like such a good nut. She always made me feel like I was so important, worth her time, extra special. I remember the big things and the little things. How she wrapped my sandwiches with wax paper when I was young. How she folded a tray out of foil to broil salami. The unmatched flakiness of her bologna's, the perfect potato to dough ratio of her burritos. The gray-colored velvety house dress she wore. The way she hugged me and pat my hand or straightened my shirt. And the sound of her voice when she answered the phone and said, "Oh, hey, Shane," like I was simultaneously her best friend and someone famous. I'll remember so many things, but mostly I'll remember how she made me feel. Like talking to me and seeing me was the very best part of her day, and that she was so proud of me, that she loved me, that she truly liked me. To feel that kind of love is the very best gift she gave. No one loves you like a grandparent, but she was even more than that. She was the kind of friend that we should all be so lucky to have, and I miss her endlessly. And I'm so grateful that I got to have so many years with her, and so lucky that she was a huge part of my life. So before I finish, I just want to speak briefly about my grandmother's last 3.5 years. When COVID hit, my grandmother was at the summit, isolated like so many people, and she'd fallen a few times, and Passover was coming. I talked to my parents about moving my grandmother in with them, and they agreed. Mom and Dad, the two of you, made the last 3.5 years of her life. You made them better, that's one thing, but you made them happen. To be clear, they would not have happened without you. You gave so selfishly, selflessly, excuse me. It was such a huge sacrifice. It was an immeasurable gift to Grandma, but it was also a gift to all of us, her family and her friends. You gave us all 3.5 more years with her. You gave her access to her family, and you gave her family access to her. I can never thank you enough for that. You gave my children a great-grandmother that they will be able to remember. You made it possible for her to attend my son's bar mitzvah. She made them feel so special. You gave of yourselves, your time, your home, your love, your endless work. And to my mother, especially you, you tirelessly made sure that Grandma had the best. From the top to down to the smallest detail, a salad with milk made with love every morning, a lunch of whatever she was in the mood for, and homemade dinners fit for a queen. You made sure that she had her nails done, her hair looked good, her clothes were pressed without a singular wrinkle, just as she would have done it if she could. Your house was a sauna for years, just so she'd never be cold. You took care of all of her day-to-day needs, her health care, managing medications, appointments, blood sugar levels. You advocated fiercely for her. You hosted visitors, making sure that everyone had what they needed, and you did everything that you could so that your home would feel like her home, and it was. You rarely left your side, and if you did, you painstakingly organized. You made sure that she would be fully taken care of. You did not care for her as a daughter-in-law. You cared for her and showed her love and gave of yourself as her daughter. I cannot thank you enough. And to Diamond Lynn, who cared for her in this last year, you also treated her with love, like she was a precious member of your family, not a client. The three of you, Mom, Dad, and Diamond Lynn, made sure that she maintained all of her dignity on the days that were hardest for her, especially on those days. You turned the hardest time of her life into the fullest and best it could have possibly been for her, and you surrounded her with so much love. She would want me to thank you for her, and so I am. When I told my cousin Mike of her passing, he said of death, I always thought of it as the worst and most catastrophic, normal, everyday occurrence. The world is never the same. And he's so right. Death is so catastrophic, and the world won't ever be the same. But I won't say it will be dimmer. She'd hate that. She'd hate to think that we experience less joy in living because of her absence, and so we won't. We'll keep her with us and appreciate the impact she made and will continue to have on our lives as we find and create more reasons to laugh and celebrate. She wouldn't want it any other way, and nothing would bring her greater joy.